Hello and welcome into the Sight and Sound Technology Podcast. My name is Stuart Lawler and this is episode number 59. podcast@sightandsound.co.uk is the email address if you'd like to get in touch with us. We always love to hear from you, and I do hope wherever you're tuning in that you're enjoying the relatively fine weather we're having, certainly here in Ireland and in the UK at the moment. It's the well into the second week of July as we're recording this podcast. Coming up today, I'll be speaking with Ian Davies from the Worshipful Company of Spectacle Makers. Fascinating piece about something that happened in London a couple of weeks ago. Stay right where you are. You don't want to miss it. The issue of unemployment and high numbers or high levels of unemployment for people with sight loss has been something that's been on, well, just about everybody's radar, I think, for a very long time. One in four people of working age are currently working, and those numbers have remained stubbornly steady, I suppose, for a very long time. Many different initiatives have tried to alleviate and make the situation better. And it's a tricky area, I think, because how do you target employers and big business to say that people with disabilities, and in the context of today's conversation, people with sight loss have talent and want to work? Well, somebody who's done that, an organization, a very interesting organization called the Worshipful Company of Spectacle Makers in London. And I was absolutely delighted a couple of weeks ago to attend an event in the Mansion House in London with some of my colleagues from Sight and Sound Technology. We didn't get to record on the day because we were so busy, and we'll talk about why we were busy in a minute. But joining me on the show today is Ian Davies, who's master of the Worshipful Company of Spectacle Makers. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me, Stuart.
We'll talk about, you know, maybe what is the master, what your role is and all that in a couple of minutes, because I'm kind of interested to hear a little bit about some of the terminology maybe and some of the things that you guys do. But listen, just before we get into the event that you ran, can you tell us a little bit about the Worshipful Company of Spectacle Makers?
Yeah, sure. So the Worshipful Company of Spectacle Makers is one of the 110 livery companies that operate within the City of London. And they were originally established in medieval times to regulate the supply of different products in the city. So, for example, the goldsmiths, the Worshipful Company of Goldsmiths, still assay gold. But there were other companies. There was a company of merchant tailors who looked after the clothing, the drapers, as it says on the tin, the butchers, the bakers, the candlestick makers,
right,
really.
Right.
And each one of these were there to protect the public and to make sure, like any regulatory body does now, that the products that were being sold were of the right quality and were produced by people who had the requisite amount of training to ensure that the public really wasn't being swindled by those products. And that was the original setup of the livery companies. We I would say, are a middle-aged company. So the Spectacle Makers were established in 1629. So we're just coming up to our 400th birthday, which, you know, in comparison to some of the companies that have been going around for 750 years, makes us relatively young. But we retain a very strong interest in what we describe as being the craft, which is basically vision. And, our overall objective is better vision for all, and that, you know, no one should be left behind because of their sight.
Okay. So the people in your company then are people who work low vision professionals. Is that right?
No, well, complete range, Stuart. So some of the companies are very close. So there's a company of solicitors that you have to be a solicitor to join. Our company is really anyone who's interested in our overall ideals. So probably about 40% of the membership are optometrists, ophthalmologists, people who've actually at some stage seen patients or treated eye care. There's probably another 40% who have worked in the vision industry in some way, shape or form over their careers, or maybe working in the charitable sector. And then there's about 20% who are people who maybe through having family connections with the eye care sector, or have met one of us and have got to know us and support what we do. So we're what we call an open company. And I think that openness gives us the ability to look on issues with a slightly broader view than just from a purely professional perspective.
It was actually really interesting. On the day in London, I met one of the members of your company who was a retired gentleman who was an eye surgeon in St. Thomas's Hospital. A fascinating conversation with him. So, yeah, I guess from all walks of life. So, Ian, let's talk about the event, I guess, which is how we met. This whole push on trying to show business that there are a talented pool of people with sight loss out there. How did you get into this?
Well, yeah, originally, I mean, I trained as an optometrist quite a number of years ago, and I started my career actually working in Manchester Eye Hospital. I used to be part of a team running a low vision clinic, and this is nearly 40 years ago. But then spent most of my career working in the contact lens industry, so in a very different sort of area. Over the last couple of years, with the spectacle makers, I give a huge credit to an organisation called Vision Foundation, who you're probably familiar with, started doing a little bit of work with them, and really started to look at vision with a much broader sense than just the correction of refractive error. And once I started to understand, I think, two things. One was the sheer number of people with visual impairment who were out of work, but also the technology that was available to enable them to get back into work, and the disconnect that existed in the context of a society where we talk a lot about inclusion, we talk a lot about diversity of thinking, a lot about making sure we've got an inclusive employment setups. I just thought that was pretty horrific, to be honest with you. And one of the opportunities that I had as master was that the Lord Mayor of the City of London, who lives in the Mansion House, Vincent Keaveney, is actually a member of our company. And through his good offices, we were able to use the Mansion House, which, if you like, gave us a platform to be able to speak to industry and try and educate them about this huge gap, as you said in your introduction, that exists, you know, and hopefully start to make some changes.
Okay, so the day itself was a breakfast event, right, where you were asking people from the City of London to come and, I suppose, just come and listen and learn was what, yeah, I got from it.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, we were targeting some of the big city employers. We were targeting people from recruitment agencies. And whenever we saw anyone who had the word inclusion or diversity in their title, we pretty well jumped on them and said, you know, the obvious question, which is, have you thought about inclusion when it comes to visual impairments? And, you know, very often they would look slightly quizzical and then a little bit embarrassed. And then they would start to talk about some of the preconceptions that they'd have. And they'd suddenly stop and say, you know, you're right, we haven't. Mm. And I think, and you know, you're at the event, Stuart, and, you know, very, very kindly on our panel. We could have carried on asking questions for a long time. I mean, there was a real engagement that I felt that was there on the day.
Yeah, there was. I suppose that kind of brings me to my next point, because there were two things I was going to say to you about the event. Because let's face it, there have been other similar sessions like this in the past. You know, I think we've all been involved in sessions which, yep, have tried to target corporates and, you know, explain what's going on. And you know, they're all very good. I think what I liked about your zine, there was two things. First of all, it was run superbly. It was so slick. It was run to time. It was very, very good. But secondly, I saw a genuine interest from audience. And as you said, the questions could have gone on for ages. People really wanted to know, how can I make sure my workplace is better and my policies and processes are inclusive to people, which I kind of haven't heard before to that extent?
Yeah, I think it was, you know, I think there were a couple of things that were going in our favor. And I've also got to say that had this not been an extraordinarily warm Friday morning in June, yeah, I think we'd probably had quite a few other people there,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
Because we did have a number of people who contacted us and said, look, love to come here, but just I can't make a trip to London at that time work. So we have actually followed up with those individuals. But I think that one of the keys was that, you know, our two speakers, you know, Vincent Keaveney, the Lord Mayor, and I, neither of us come from this world. You know, we're both businessmen who've worked in a number of different areas. I've kind of got an optical background. The Lord Mayor is a solicitor. But when we both understood what the issues were, I know we both spoke from the heart. And I don't think we were, I don't want this to sound disrespectful to other efforts, but we weren't really preaching. I think it was more a perspective of saying, and I think the Lord Mayor said it extremely well, if you're serious about inclusion, you've got to be serious about every different type of individual in your inclusivity programs. And I think that was quite compelling. I think that was one of the points when I saw people suddenly stop and think, yeah, you know, I think about race, I think about gender, I think about sexuality. I maybe think about disability, but I probably don't. And then as a subset of disability, it's extremely unlikely, I think, of visual impairment because, hey, they can't see anyway.
Yeah.
And the fact that we had you on the panel, we had, you know, Keith Valentine, we had, you know, a good friend, Naki Rizzi on the panel. You were not there because you were visually impaired. You were there because you do the jobs that you do extremely well. And I think people actually, I think that was something else that people respected was that everyone on that panel was there for the same reason, which was to talk about an issue without it being about them. And I think that was also a key factor.
You've created this event in London. You ran an event that was really successful. I think people came out of that session very engaged, talking a lot. I thought was interesting as well, Ian, was people stayed around for quite a while afterwards.
Yeah, we had to kick them out in the end.
Which is great. So what? How do you move to the next stage? How do you, as a company, engage or kind of try to keep in touch with those people who attended, who were at the time, there is no doubt, very interested to try to see how they could make a difference?
Well, we followed up with everybody. So whether people attended or didn't attend, we sent them a follow-up, we sent them a brief summary. We sent them links to the various resources that were mentioned on the day. And it is our hope that we will do something in the next 12 months to build on what we did there. We'd love to, you know, we'd love to change the world. Everybody would. We have to start with the audience that we have, and we are lucky in the sense that we have an audience within. And I apologise for this as a Yorkshireman, but you know, it is within the City of London. Mm. But it is where there is an awful lot of influence. There's a lot of big employers. The reach of policies that the people in that room can talk to does extend beyond London to the rest of the country. So it is certainly our intent to it probably not repeat it in exactly the same way, but build on what we did, you know. And again, one of the really interesting things as we were putting together, you know, our panel, as we were putting together the invitations, you know, we ended up with enough potential material to run the whole thing again and, you know, had a little bit more time. So there is certainly intent to repeat it, Stuart. Exactly what that looks like at the moment, I don't know. In fact, you know, I happen to know that over the next week, there's a couple of meetings with my successor, you know, to talk about what it might look like in the future.
Okay, and of course, the fact, and you've mentioned the Lord Mayor already, Alderman Vincent Keaveney, who happens to also be from Dublin, I think.
He is indeed, very proud Irishman.
Okay, so, but he, and I certainly got this as well, Ian, and I think you commented to me the other day, he gets this. So I suppose that certainly helped the case as well, didn't it?
Yeah, and I think part of it is because it's very, very directly linked with one of the passions in his life, one of the themes of his mayoralty, which is people and purpose. And it's about getting people from diverse backgrounds into the City of London, which historically, whether rightly or wrongly, perceptually or actually, has been viewed as being a place where to get a job, you need to know the right person, you need to come from the right family and have gone to the right schools.
Right.
You know, Vincent is extremely keen to break down those thoughts. And it's not about where you come from or what sort of accent you've got. It's about your ability. It's mm-hmm. about having the ability to make a positive impact within business. So with that as a key theme of his mayoralty, talking of, you know, adding to that the thing around inclusion of vision impairment becomes a relatively straightforward exercise. It's not a, you know, he's not going off in a totally different direction, which is when he talks about it, which is, I think, why he was so eloquent and passionate in his presentation.
Okay. I want to just for maybe 2 minutes, I want to step away from the event before we let you go. I was looking the week before I went to London, I was looking on the Worshipful Company of Spectacle Makers website. And I was fascinated by the, if I want to maybe use a term, the structures of the company and yeah. some of the things that you guys do. So Freeman of the City of London. Now, I know when you get the freedom of Dublin City over here, right, you can graze sheep outside Trinity College. What can you do when you're Freeman of the City of London?
Oh, my goodness. So, just you wait. So the end of September, we're actually taking part in the annual sheep drive over London Bridge.
Wow.
Now, I am not suggesting that any Freeman of the City of London show up in a rush hour with half a dozen sheep and plant them over London Bridge. I suspect that would be a particularly poor thing to do. Interesting, I'm also a Freeman of the City of York and have sheep grazing rights on the strays of York as well.
Okay.
These are largely historical. There's also a certain amount of mythology around it. But essentially, the origin comes from you became a freeman to indicate that you were free to practice your trade or profession within the City of London. That was the origin of it. So you started your career as an apprentice. You maybe apprenticed for 7 years. You trained. Once you were of that level, then you became free to practice, as I say, your art or your craft within the city. With time, then your expertise improved and you could then be nominated by the craft or the guild that you worked with to become a liveryman of the city.
Right.
And to denote you as being a expert in the field, you had the rights to wear a certain coloured gown, which would then depict you in your shop as being, you know, a true expert. So, you know, in our company, we've changed a little bit. So some companies still have apprentices. We don't. It's because we're so broad, it really wouldn't work. But we have a journeyman category for people starting their career in any of the optical industries. But then, one could become a freeman. If you're a freeman, you can then become a freeman of the City of London, which is a wonderful ceremony.
Experience, yeah. You were talking about that on the website as well, and people.
Yeah, it's good. And then ultimately, if you really want to get involved, you're a liveryman, and as a liveryman, you actually have voting rights. So the Lord Mayor of the City of London is voted on by the liveryman. In fact, last week we were in London at Guildhall to vote the new sheriffs in. So, it is archaic to a point. There is a lot of history. There's a lot of tradition in that. But there's also a very serious side, and the very serious side is that, livery companies raise something like 75 million pounds a year for charities.
Okay, so there's a lot of stuff being done.
So, there is a serious side to it as well as the dressing up, which is, good fun as well.
I've put your number in my phone, Ian, and when I'm in London, if I get into trouble, I say, I know a Freeman of the City, so I'll give you a call.
Yeah, well, good luck with that. If you are in London, please do give me a call. I'd love to see you, but I can't guarantee I can bail you out if you misbehave, I'm afraid.
Okay. Ian, I thoroughly, and I do want to say it again, I know I said it to yourself on the day, I said it to some of your colleagues. The event was really, really great. It was really well run. I could sense the enthusiasm, and we've kind of talked about it already on the podcast. But thank you for what you've done. And I know from talking to the other panel members that day, it was, and this is, I think, important from a visually impaired person's perspective, it was done so tastefully. And as you have made the point earlier, people were on the panel not because they were blind or had low vision. People were on the panel because of what they did.
Yeah.
So thank you for kind of flying that flag, I suppose. And I do wish you every success in the future. We'd love to stay in touch with you. And I hope we can collaborate again in the future.
I very much hope we can, Stu. And as I say, once again, I appreciate you coming over. It was a long trip for you, but also your colleagues from Sight and Sound. It was so useful to actually have a desk with the equipment that visually impaired people use. And it seemed to me to be packed the whole time I looked at it. And I think people realized this isn't quite as scary as they thought it could be. And you know, hopefully together we can really make a difference. So, you know, thank you very much for the invitation. Pleasure chatting to
you.
Well,
that's it. And I suppose, again, when people can look at technology, and again, now that we're coming out of this, hopefully post-COVID era, and we're getting back together, you know, hopefully it is a bit easier for people to look at these things and ask questions and realize, as you said, it's not as scary. So, yeah. Ian, listen, look after yourself and stay in touch. And thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Stuart.
My thanks there to Ian Davies, and true gentleman, and also Ian's colleagues at the Worshipful Company of Spectacle Makers. We really enjoyed the time we spent with Ian and the company, and meeting so many people who were genuinely enthusiastic about the potential of having visually impaired people in their organization. That's just about it for this edition, but we're back soon. Until then, from Stuart Lawler and everybody at Sight & Sound Technology, thank you for listening. And take care. Bye-bye.